open the public forum. That is, if there's anyone that would like to address the commission on any item that's not on the agenda already or in the public request request. Does anyone like to address the commission? Seeing none, we'll close the public forum. The next is the public requests and appeals. Same thing applies. No one, no public request or appeals. So we will move on to the first action item, and that is the minutes from our July the 21st commission meeting. Those were in your packet. Any questions, comments? I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that we pass the minutes from the meeting of July 21st.
Second. We have a motion.
Second.
Page, that's a second. Any discussion? Yep. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries to approve the minutes from July 21st. The next section will be reports, and we will start with financial report. Jared, good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. How are y'all?
Good.
Good.
Okay. Well, so it begins another fiscal year. Let's give you the report for July 2025, starting with billed revenue and consumption. In the water department, we had billed revenue of about $1.87 million. Compared to July from the prior year, that's virtually unchanged. If you look at the billed revenue associated with consumption, it's down about 3.5%, while water consumption itself is down about 8%. Looking at the sewer fund, billed revenue is $1.8 million. Billed revenue in total is up 16.8%. Revenue associated with consumption is up 5.5%, and consumption itself up 2.5%. I don't have a great explanation for why water consumption is down 8% while sewer consumption is up 2.5%. Normally, you would expect to see those things tracking a little more closely together. We do know that,
right?
Yeah, we do know that July of this year was a wetter month than July of the prior year, and undoubtedly that is affecting consumption patterns. So we'll see if that trend holds month to month, but it looks a little bit unusual to start the year. For our actuals versus budget, 1 month through the fiscal year is 8%, so we use that as our benchmark. For the water fund, revenues are at 8%, expenses are at 9%, and our capital outlay is 5% of budget. And for the sewer department, very similar, revenues at 8%, expenses also at 8%, capital outlay 2% of budget. For our year-to-date income, water year-to-date income 1 month in is $469,000. That's 8% of our budgeted income. It's down 21%. Year over year. And just studying the comparative income statement a little bit, the revenues are down a little bit, but that year over year variance seems to be more a function of what's happening on the expense side, where so far this year we've had higher expenses related to salaries, to depreciation, and to water purchases. In total though, for the water department, we are expecting, we did budget more net income in FY26 than we did in FY25, and so far, you know, 1 month in, we're on track there. Sewer year-to-date income is $606,000. That's 9% of budget, and it's up 1% year over year. Access and impact fee revenue, we collected $280,600 between water and sewer. Year-to-date actuals are 9% of the FY25 total and 6% of the FY26 budget. And I'll point out that it's access and impact fees that really explain this big number up here, where sewer billed revenue in total was 16.8% more than July of the prior year. Of that $280,000 collected this month, $194,000 of that was related to sewer, and that compares to just $14,000 that we collected in July of 2024. So that's the reason for the year-over-year difference in total revenue. Our cash reserves combined for water and sewer are at $57.7 million. That's up about $7.7 million from this time last year. And 7% of our purchased water is unaccounted for. That's a 12-month rolling average. The next time you see me, I'll probably be in the middle of audit, as Forbes Mazars is scheduled to be here the second week of September, tentatively. That completes the financial report.
Any further question, comments? Okay.
Thank you all.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Engineering reports.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Move right into project status. Future engineering reports will probably have this look a little bit different. We've started implementing some Microsoft project management tools to kind of help us do a little bit better scheduling and keep these projects on track. So hopefully by next month we'll see a different format here with a little bit more detail. But our some things we have in pre-design and concept phase, of course, that capacity improvement project at the PCF, we're still I was hoping to have an engineering proposal to bring to you this month. We're still working out some details on that, and so that'll come at the next meeting. And we're also drafting the request for qualifications for the CMAR contractor at the same time. Mount Hebron interconnection, I think we've got everything set to go. With Garver doing that design, that's contingent on Bentonville approving an amendment to the interconnection agreement between the two cities. Rogers City Council has already approved that, so we're just waiting on Bentonville to get started with that. And then the RW field operations facility planning. I've spoken a little bit in the past about how we're kind of outgrown our operations out back here, and we're looking at a city-owned property along Oak Street near the old street department location. I've got an exhibit in here of kind of what we're looking at doing there. Our sewer flow monitoring plan, we have ordered that equipment, so that should get here and get installed in the next couple of months. And we've got the sewer model update. We actually had a virtual meeting earlier today with some preliminary results on that is going to inform some of the sewer projects that we have in the pipeline, so to speak. We wanted to do that model update just to confirm some of the sizing, since we're going to be seeing some larger densities. And it does look like there's going to be some projects that are affected that we might need to go from a 24-inch pipe to a 30-inch pipe, for example, to get us through build out under some of the new planning assumptions. And so I think that was a valuable exercise that it's going to lead to some good design decisions. Western Corridor Transmission Main, we're in the middle of the appraisal process on most of those tracks, especially the ones south of Highway 264. We're still dealing with some potential environmental issues on the north side of that, between Mount Hebron Park and 264. That's kind of a high intensity karst area that's a little bit more sensitive, so we're working through some issues with that area. And then we budgeted some asphalt rehabilitation for this fiscal year, and so we're working on a project to recoat, restripe the parking lot, do some seal cracking, and When you look at all the asphalt that we have across the water tower sites, the plant, about 20 different lift stations, it's quite a bit. And so we'll have a pretty good size asphalt rehabilitation contract coming up. And then 4th Street water and sewer replacements, that's going to be a fairly large project. That's going to go from Ulrich Street up to Oak Street. And that's going to be one that the street department will be installing curb and gutter and basically rebuilding that portion of road. And I know we've had a lot of water breaks out there, and so we're about 90% on that set of plans. We're doing this in-house, and so we're working to finalize those plans and get that out to bid and coordinate with the street department on the timing and the road closures and everything like that. I'll present West Chestnut Street waterline improvements today. Fielder operations equipment shed replacement. I'm expecting to get the 2-week notice for them to come and install that just any day now. A lot of projects still under construction. And then we completed the 2025 sewer smoke testing, and so we'll probably have that report and those results next week. Any questions? Our solids handling phase two, I'm happy to announce that we're coordinated with ADEQ, sent them some supplemental information, and received a no further action letter with regard to the underground storage tanks. And so our contractor is continuing to work on the building foundation. These were taken about early last week, so I think the entire foundation and stem walls are poured now. They're finishing up some building underground utilities, and we'll be pouring the pad in the next couple of weeks, and you'll start to see the steel building on site and being erected near the end of September. And this ADEQ storage tank issue is thrown off our schedule a little bit, but the contractor has really done a good job of keeping things going on other parts of the site. And in terms of the overall project schedule, it hasn't hurt us at all. As a matter of fact, our original completion date on this site was October of 2026, and that's been pushed back to July of 2026. We had some assumptions on the delivery dates of some electrical gear that wasn't supposed to be here till next spring. It's already here in the warehouse. So a lot of that stuff was delivered a lot sooner than possible, which that was our critical path to the end of the project, and that's no longer the case. So we've got about another year in this project to be complete. And then anybody's been out to the plant recently, our dryer supplier Huber has been making deliveries, and they've delivered the majority of the large pieces and parts to construct these dryers. And we're still trying to get a good handle of the inventory of what's on site versus what still has yet to be shipped. So, but we've got a lot of equipment showing up on the site now.
Ryan, I brought this up a few months ago about having a meeting out there. I don't know if that makes sense, but I still would like for us to consider that sometime, maybe September, October. When you think it makes sense for us to be out there, I'd like for us to do that. I don't want to complicate, but I would like for us as a commission to meet out there if there's a place that we can meet. But I'd like to have a tour, kind of an update. And I know we get pictures, and thank you for the pictures, but it would be better for us to be on site. If we can make that happen.
We could do our regular meeting here, but we could just do an auxiliary meeting, call it public, and it's a tour, and that's all. Because the IT portion of this is the toughest part.
Okay. that's, again, I still think whether we, since we can't meet out there, it sounds like that's not a possibility. I would like to have, if it makes sense, y'all can kind of schedule a tour to go out there. And obviously, because we'll just make notification to, for public, so EMS wants to attend. But I'd like to do that, you know, once it cools down a little bit, maybe September, October. And you all know when the timing would be right. I mean, it's been a little bit early now, but.
I'll send out some dates or something.
I'd like to keep that in front of us if we can.
We love giving tours.
But you don't think there's any way to conduct a meeting out there and do it all at one time? Is that what you're saying? You don't think that we can conduct?
No, we can have a meeting. It's just a tour, but it wouldn't be all.
It wouldn't be an official meeting? I'm just trying to.
Yeah, it'd be a public meeting. It would be our commission meeting.
Okay. Because I was trying to do it where it would be one meeting rather than trying to schedule a tour. I'll let you figure that out.
We'll see, but it's pretty heavy to do.
Okay.
I'll try to get a better handle on exactly when some of the steel for the building is going to be erected. I think that would be a good time. Once we can actually start going vertical, get a better scale, feel the scale of the project.
It's still an ask. I don't want to be, you know, a burden, but at the same time, I think it'd be good for us to get out there and take a look what's going on. So if y'all are open to that, we'll get some dates, and if it works.
You bet.
Attend, if not, we'll. Okay, thank you.
Absolutely. I mentioned our field operations facility concept plan on West Oak Street. And so if you're familiar with this site, kind of to the top left is the old street department facility, which actually used to be our previous wastewater treatment plant location before we moved out to Rainbow Road. And so city owns areas on the north end and south side of Oak Street, and that'll be extended over Turtle Creek to connect up to Promenade. And so, you know, we feel like this is going to, you know, give us some growing room out there in the field for additional personnel and equipment. It'll also be a more centralized location, especially for the sewer crew. You know, this is kind of the edge of our sewer boundary over here downtown. It's a little bit more convenient for some of the water since we kind of go all the way out toward the lake. But we feel like this is going to be a good centralized location. It's going to be a little bit of a city campus, if you will. They're going to be doing some work on the fire department training center across the road. You're still going to have the animal shelter services over there, and Parks is also going to have a maintenance facility in this area. So we're excited about it. We've been talking to the facilities group over at the city for a while, and you know, after this goes away, I'm sure they're going to have something fun planned back here. So
did they say, and again, this is kind of a little bit off, but I know Oak Street was one of the last bond projects to extend that all the way through. Are you hearing, is that in the next bond issue? Because obviously that's a pretty major, you know, when you jump Turtle Creek, you've got to have a lot of bridge work in there. So
I don't know the specifics about the next bond issue, but my understanding is that the first projects they're going to be listed in that was everything that they couldn't get to with this last one because of funding. And I would think that Oak Street with all the, I mean, Oak Street, right now you can go from Montanay Road all the way to Dodson Road after this current project's finished. And this will be the only gap. And so I would think this would be a very high priority project.
Like there's an extension, I guess, is a 52nd on out to Dodson. It looks like it's mostly complete. The roundabout on the other end is still being worked on. And then I noticed, I think they approved at City Council, did they not approve also for the animal shelter? Mm-hmm. I think they did that last week's commission meeting. I think they finally have moved forward with, looked like probably an upgrade. So that, like you say, a campus, and in fact, they're going to spend some money there. So I think that'd be positive. So
will this be then returned to the city, or will you have water?
The plan is to return this back area to the city, and I'm not sure what they're going to have planned it back there. Because all we'll really maintain here is the administration and engineering, and all the field operations will move out to the Oak Street location.
Thank you.
Any And then I have our plan review list here. 134 total plan sets reviewed in the month of July. I think we've been averaging between 140 and 150, so down a little bit, but still plugging along. I will mention that they are changing the process a little bit over there. The site development plans and public improvement plans are going to be combined into one review. I think they tried to separate them out to make it a simpler process, but most of the projects we come in have to go through two processes instead of one, so they're going to go ahead and combine those and further refine that process to make it easier on everybody. Unless you have any questions, that's all I have.
Questions, comments? We'll move to pollution control facility report. Todd, good afternoon, sir.
And actually, the plant performed pretty well last month. We did have one really big storm that came through that affected us, but not enough to move our monthly averages in any kind of a negative way. Really pretty good numbers for the month. The industrial pretreatment, you can see surcharges, OMP, actually met their permit limits for these, so no violation. This means they're no longer significantly non-compliant. So I felt like they've been putting forth effort and they were able to get that under control. Doesn't mean they're stopping their plans. It just, you know, they have been working at that. And it's harder for them in the summer than it is in the wintertime, so that's actually a pretty impressive move. Tyson's Chicken Quick, I expect during this construction that they're talking about, they'll probably have a bus on their permit. They've talked to us and we're expecting that. So, they've got to do maintenance and they're kind of hung. So, you know, they'll probably have a non-compliance letter for that month. That was the most significant thing on there. Amber continues to move along with the fog inspection. It always amazes me. Like, I go through here and I'm like, you know, picking up like Tecla's Bar. And, like, I've never even heard of that. Like, we're getting new restaurants in so fast now. Mm-hmm. I can't even keep track of all the stuff. So I really appreciate Amber being on her game and adding guys and being organized enough to continue to keep good track of it. Brian already talked about our solids handling upgrades. The one thing I'll point out about that moving up on the schedule is we start struggling when the weather changes, which happens in that fall. So moving that back to the summertime is a really big deal to us. That's whenever we're more easily able to keep up with our solids. Than in the fall and the winter time. So that's a big deal for us because there'll probably be some scheduled shutdowns and things like that we'll have to recover from and move forward with. So, you know, and as we learn to operate the new dryer and getting everything caught up. So that move back is really a big deal for us. So we were really excited to hear about that. And I'm not sure, just as a sidebar, this is one of the really big advantages of CMAR, in my opinion, is having somebody on your side that's able to reconstruct these schedules this way. Look, if this was, you know, a traditional design bid build, probably the contractor just moves people off of this project into other money-making opportunities if he, you know, receives some good news like this that we wouldn't even really be party to. So having the open books, sometimes, you know, you question about whether the cost is worth it, but in this case, it's a big help to us. So I just wanted to point that out. Thank you to the commission for letting us go down that route on these complex projects. It really helps. During July, some of those big events, we have seven pump slots, and what it boils down to is we lost about four pumps in a period of 2 days, and we hadn't lost any over the last year. So I was really proud of my guys for being able to scramble and get things done, but we still actually are waiting on parts for three of those pumps. We've got one hole left that doesn't have a good pump in it, and we don't have a small spare. So we've got two large pumps out for rebuild and a smaller pump out for rebuild still from this event. At the same time, we also had a failure in our centrifuge. It cost us a big deal. That cabinet has given us trouble. For about 6 months now, we've been having intermittent power failures. We've moved into some power monitoring now, trying to isolate where that problem is coming from in that cabinet, whether it's coming from our equipment side or the supply side. And by supply side, I mean it comes from our equipment still. But we don't know where to isolate that from at this time. So we're installing some monitoring equipment on that. We've got an electrical engineer that's helping us along with that as well. So it's functioning right now, and we haven't had any more failures since we started monitoring. But we're hoping that some of the data will highlight maybe smaller issues that would point us in that direction. So overall, we treated 344.6 million gallons, which 280 would be, your perfect month. So about 65 million gallons of water from the rain. We had a monthly average of 11.1 MGD. We had six and a quarter inches of rain over six events. So those are pretty significant rains for that month. So that's what I have. Any questions that I can answer for you guys? I know I went through a lot of information really quickly.
You said you're getting those what's the cost difference between a rebuild and ordering new?
It is pretty significant. It's about $30,000 a pump to get those rebuilt. A new one's going to be for the smaller ones. It's a little less than that to get it rebuilt, but the smaller ones are probably $40,000 to $50,000 pumps. Probably cost us $20,000 to $25,000 to rebuild it. The larger ones, it's probably $30,000 to $40,000 to get it rebuilt, depending on what was broke. They're going to be $70,000 to $90,000. We haven't quoted them in a little bit, and the part of the reason for that is every time we've had them quoted, the lead time on is so long that we don't want to be without a pump for that long. So it's more of a time issue than a money issue. If I could snap my hands and get the lead time for a new pump into the same realm, it might be time to think about that. But the other half of that is when you look at our upcoming projects, one of them is to replace this lift station. So I hate to go out and spend a bunch of money on a new pump and then just decommission it in 5 or 6 years when you're talking about a 15 to 20 year pump. So
that could go on the shelf as a spare.
It could, except that we're moving to a totally different kind of pump on our new pump stations. Yeah, so it would, I mean, I'm sure we could put it on GovDeals and get something out of it. It wouldn't just be a complete scrap, but we would lose a tremendous amount on it. So if I can limp these along for the next few years, that'd be great. I can't guarantee that's going to happen. If something solid gets in there and tears up the actual body of the pump, we'll have to replace it. But so far, we've been pretty fortunate in that it's just been motors, windings, sensors, leads, that kind of things. That is what has mostly failed on these. So we've been able to recondition those along the way pretty efficiently.
Todd, real quick, just a question on the grease interceptors, that whole inspection. Just a question. How do these businesses know what they're supposed to have? Is this part of their what they should know? Because it seems like there's a lot of different things that they, get get in trouble for.
Right.
Or get written up for. So how are they educated for those grease interceptors?
So whenever they come through development and review, part of that goes to Amber, and she evaluates what their business plan is, type of food, how many seats, and the size of the kitchen and all that, and recommends them a size of that. And then she gives them a pamphlet of information and says, hey, as you get opened up, I'm going to come and I'm going to be doing inspections on you, on this. And during those initial few inspections, she establishes, like, how taxed is that grease interceptor? Like, is it filling up very rapidly or not? So, and then that sets a pumping frequency that she establishes on their license or permit. I can't remember what it's called technically that she assigns that to. But it is all sent to them in a letter from RWU. And then she puts that in her database about when she needs to go check on that. And then it's updated. Now, it is a challenge because, as you know, restaurants have a high turnover. Mm-hmm. So every time she goes in, she may be talking to a new manager. And if the manager's not responsive, then, you know, she goes back. And usually a district manager or a building manager or things like that, she's able to address it, and they understand, and they have a working relationship with that manager. So I think the new thing, the new code actually puts it back on the building owner as opposed to necessarily the restaurant manager if the restaurant isn't keeping it up. I think that's the point of contact, but if we do run into trouble, eventually it goes into the actual landowner.
Okay, thank you. No, that was great. That was very helpful. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Next area, we have operations report, Garrett Road Lift Station. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Brandon Carnahan. I'm the utility system supervisor. My crews are tasked with maintaining the sewer system throughout Rogers. I was asked to share some information on one of our ongoing projects, the hydrogen sulfide H2S odor problem we have on Pleasant Grove Road. Just a little background on the lift station. It's a Garrett Road lift station or Cross Creek lift station. The capacity is 2.35 million gallons a day. It was installed in the late 1990s, and we have three pumps in that lift station, two large flight pumps and then one small jockey pump.
Excuse me, just a second.
Yes, sir.
And you have the, I don't, Cross Creek, tell me, where is that? Cross Creek lift station? Just general area.
You know where, what's that crossroad right
Janie
there?
Janie Dar.
Janie Dar.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
It's that big subdivision right behind Janie Dar.
Okay. Where the pool is?
But yes. It's that
subdivision. Yeah, Cross Creek. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
And the force main is 2 miles long that serves that. So in the last 5 years, we've received pretty consistent odor complaints from the area where that lift station discharges, which is the bike crossing on Pleasant Grove Road, right down from the Casey's. It seems like we get calls there at least once a month that I'm made aware of. So pretty often that we get calls. So obviously if we're getting calls about it, we wanna get it sorted and figured out what's going on. So I lost my slide there. Give me a second. Our first order of business is to conduct some testing and collect data. We installed these odor loggers to monitor the H2S gases and in the manholes around that area. What we found was pretty alarming. The OSHA limit for immediate danger to life or health is 100 parts per million of H2S. In these manholes, we were getting peak concentrations of over 800 parts per million. So we could pretty conclusively say that the H2S is a major problem and is probably where the odor is coming from. The first strategy that we went with to solve this issue was to install a jockey pump. The goal was to reduce the detention time in the force main. Our SCADA teams assisted with programming and installation. And the result was pretty great. We saw immediate lowering of the H2S levels in the manhole. But we still get complaints about it, so we're still working on some fixes for it, I guess. The next thing that we decided to try was a odor block treatment. It's basically a big pink block that hangs in the manhole, and it's supposed to neutralize and absorb the H2S and the odor that comes with that. We saw some small changes, but nothing really worthwhile, not really a sufficient solution. And our next steps that we're still discussing and still working on, the first one is to install a bubbler or some other way to introduce air into the system to avoid the anaerobic state that fosters H2S. Or also cleaning the force main. That force main is 30 years old and it's never been cleaned. So I'm sure that there's probably some reasons for the bad smell in there. And then finally, chemical injection, which is going to be really expensive. It's more equipment to maintain, and it's just dangerous to have more chemicals on site. So we're going to go through any solutions we can find and go from there.
You looked at ozone.
Ozone? Mm-hmm. No, ma'am. It'll be something that I can definitely do some research into.
I think it might be handy. It's cheap to create.
The problem with ozone, though, I think, would be that it doesn't work well when there's a lot of suspended solids, I think. Because the light can't hit all of the...
That's UV.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm wrong. All right. I'll look into ozone.
You probably have some ozone connections.
Yes, I can. It's going to be...
It's non-discriminant.
It's going to attack any carbon source in there. And so it's going to degrade our pipes. It's going to be the biggest issue with it, aside from the expense and maintenance of it. Because you got to have pure oxygen to start, and you got to have enough energy to vaporize that into O3 molecules. So it's not out of the question because it does put a lot of oxygen into the water. It would be a very expensive process if you really need stainless steel pipes to be able to get it to where it doesn't even pipes up to.
Yeah, Brandon, nice to have you. Might tell the force main being 2 miles long, it's a reactor. You might.
So the force main is 12 inches in diameter and 2 miles long. I think we figured it out that they hold 60,000 gallons of wastewater. And from our SCADA team, they're saying that that much water being pumped, it takes 3 pump cycles for the wastewater to go from the start to the finish, which might be hours, and overnight it can be even longer. So the mitigation with the jockey pump is that it keeps water moving all the time. So if we can figure out a way to keep water always going through there, then you don't have the issue of it getting stagnant or H2S.
Yeah, it's real important that the drafts that Brandon showed you that diurnal cycle. So you have that first flush, and as long as everything's moving, just as he said, you're fine. Those are the low spots. And then everybody, last flush, 10:30, nothing happens until the morning. Except that sits in that reactor, if you will. And it goes from aerobic to anaerobic, and that is what builds up the H2S. So the whole idea is to keep it moving and or keep it from going anaerobic. There's chemical, ozone, there's a myriad of things. We're trying to start, as Brandon said, from the least expensive and move on up. But if you drive by there, sometimes you'll smell it, sometimes you won't. That's why. It's a diurnal cycle, and as I've told Brandon, we put this one front and center, Brian, knows about too, that we're going to make this kind of pet project. There's a lot of ways we can attack this, but a two-mile-long, 12-inch force main is a terrible thing to have. If we go chemicals, you're going chemicals for the rest of your life. So we don't really want to do that. But we're looking at all kinds of ways, and he's going through a progression to get there. Engineering is helping, and hopefully we can get there. But it's not a constant smell. You can smell it. You can imagine that jockey pump helped. The reason the jockey pump couldn't keep going and doing anything more is it eventually runs out of water to pump. So it has to shut down and burn up. So it shuts down. I mean, you just got to sit. That's not good.
I'll point out that this is the largest lift station, besides the wastewater plant, it's the largest lift station we have in our collection system. It was designed to handle wastewater from, basically a very large area of Southwest Rogers. Right now, it's operating at about half its capacity. And so there's still a lot of open ground out there to build out. And so, like Brent said, it's pumping down. It's running out of wastewater pumps. So this stuff sits in the pipe. But eventually, as this gets built out, it will become less of a problem as it can keep up and keep those lines cleared out with fresh wastewater.
Brandon, good report. Thank you. And good luck with the ongoing process. As with everything, it's ongoing, but thank you. Well done. Okay, that concludes reports. We have nothing under old business, so we will move to new business. And the first item under new business would be bid results for Chestnut Street waterline improvements. And we have in our packet some information on that.
Yes. So I'll go to the drawing here first, explain what we're doing. So this is the, if you're aware of where the new Ritter and Spool apartments are over here on First and Chestnut. Those were constructed along Chestnut Street there. That this part of Chestnut was originally supposed to be part of a larger streetscaping project that was going to go from Elm Street up to Locust along Second and then Chestnut. So we had a much larger project planned here. The city trimmed that back when the bond funding was starting to run low. However, with developments on the north and south side of the street here, they're going to go ahead and do the streetscaping on this project. So that caused us to trim our scope of work down as well to this about approximately 500 feet of water line, which has some interconnections at First Street and a railroad bore. And so there's quite a bit involved in it. The existing line is AC water lines, and it was installed probably about 50 years ago or so. We've replaced everything on the east side of the tracks here with the Arkansas Street project. We developed a leak where this tapping sleeve is right here, and so this portion of water line here right now is shut down because of this leak. And so this was bid out. We received one bid on this project that was substantially over the engineer's estimate. And the engineer's estimate, frankly, surprised me. I had budgeted about $300,000, I believe, for this project in this year's budget. And so, in short, we recommend rejecting the bid. I think there's some other things we could do. The main part of that water line is going to be one point repair, and then we really just need to replace some valves. And we can look at lining the rest of it And I believe this is something that we can do in-house with field operations, extend the life of that pipe, allow the street department to come back and do their streetscaping and asphalt the street. But $689,000 for 500, basically one city block of water line, I don't believe it's cost efficient. I think we can find a better way to deal with this. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Commissioners, questions, comments? We have a recommendation to reject the bid from Garrett X. With that, I would entertain a motion.
Motion.
Second.
Motion. Second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed to the motion? Motion carries to reject the bid from Garrett X on the Chestnut Street waterline improvements.
Good job, Brian.
Thank you.
Thank you for watching the dollars.
Absolutely.
Redoing pumps and in-house work. Keeping those reserves up there. Okay, the next two items. We have the resolution 25-28. It's a resolution approving the purchase of a certain motor vehicle, authorizing the expenditure of funds for the purchase, waiving competitive bidding, and for other purposes. Hey, Johnny.
Hi, how are you?
Good, sir.
We're coming to you to ask you to waive competitive bidding for us to purchase a van for our leak detection. There is no vans on the Arkansas State procurement bid, and that's why we're asking to waive competitive bidding. We found one that is within the budget that we put in the budget from McCarty Daniels over in Bentonville, right? And we're just asking for your permission to purchase this vehicle.
Is this an addition or a replacement?
This is a replacement. And we know the other van, we purchased it not too long before, but we're having a lot of mechanical issues with that one for some reason, and it makes more sense for us, instead of putting a new motor in and doing the transmission and some other things, just going ahead and replacing it, and that's why we're electing to replace it. So,
second.
Motion, second. Discussion? And something like that, does that one go away as a trade-in, or is it
we'll sell it on GovDeals, yeah, as soon as we strip it.
Further discussion? All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries to approve resolution number 25-28. The next item is resolution 25-29, a resolution authorizing the purchase of certain closed circuit television equipment, authorizing expenditure of funds for the purchase, waiving competitive bidding, and for other purposes.
And we're coming to you to ask for permission to waive competitive bidding again on, we're looking to buy some new camera equipment. And the reason we're asking for to waive competitive bidding on this is because this matches our current camera equipment that we use. We just need to buy a new bigger camera and new equipment too, so we can start running two full camera vans instead of the one. We had purchased a smaller camera and we thought we could do some of the smaller, we could do bigger pipes with it. It's not working for us as we thought it was, so we're needing to purchase this bigger camera and a bigger track. So we ask you to waive competitive bidding so we can buy this equipment. And this is for the price of $111,643.80. It's under the price that we have in our budget, a little bit, or quite a bit, but is that the right price, Robert? Yes.
I made the price based on a different estimate that I've seen as I was looking at the, sorry to catch it before, but I didn't see there's a mini cam proposal here for $11,953.80, and the resolution calls for $7,643.50. So, I think I might be a little short, $300 short for Johnny here. So, is it the $11,953?
It's $9,953.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Mr. Chairman, then to make sure he's not short, I just propose that the commission, if there, what's the best resolution, allow the price to be interlineated, that is to say, or write in the correct price on the resolution.
So you want us to add?
I'd make the motion.
Well, and it also says plus additional shipping charges, local taxes, and any insulation, so for the purchase. So do you want us, $111,643.80 is what has been proposed.
I make a motion that we allow RWU to negotiate the final price, that we approve the purchase of this mini can.
Second.
Yeah, there's additional charges here for the $11,643, so that covers the additional charges. You can just pass the resolution as it's written.
All right, motion and a second to pass the resolution as presented. Any further discussion? All in favor of the motion to approve?
Aye.
Passes resolution 25-29.
Thank you.
And with that, we have overrides at this time. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
To make a motion that we adjourn.
Second.
Kathy, everybody said second, so we are adjourned.
Mm-hmm.